Hello, and welcome to McCartney in Goal. This is the podcast that debates and dissects a great album of popular music.
I'm and David then dances
Hughes,
to it.
And
then dances
and I'm to joined it. By my fellow judges, Brett.
Our material.
And Steve Sumner.
What are you looking at?
I'm looking at you two beautiful people.
Yeah, really.
The plan is that we're going to throw in some stories, we'll mix in our opinions and sprinkle over a sporting knockout format. We're going to debate these songs and pit them against each other until we reach a grand final and discover our favourite song on this album. And we always promise to be uninformed, biased and unruly. On this episode, we are debating The Immaculate Collection by Madonna. It's like a verging on pop perfection.
Ooh. Lovely.
It's some strong of her best material, girl. It's got hits that we cherish, like Cherish.
Yeah.
It's borderline spoiled by these awful puns.
Ooh, yes. Oh, yes. I wouldn't say borderline, I'd say just spoiled.
Right, but...
Is that it?
Yes,
that's over.
It.
Oh, yeah, good. Yeah.
It's not bad. Not bad.
Okay. Yeah. It's all right. Four, I think there were. I counted four.
Now, there's a massive the 17 tracks on this album, so we're going to go straight into a qualifying round to whittle these tracks down to eight quarterfinalists.
No pre-discussion about Madge.
No, that's going to come. We're going to intersperse the discussion.
Madge chat.
Her madness. Her royal madness.
So we're going to take these tracks in the order that they appear in the album. So our first qualifier is Holiday against Lucky Star.
So, Holiday is one of the very first singles she released. It's certainly her first hit, isn't it, really? Great, great bouncy. I mean, it just totally establishes who she is from the get-go. Great bouncy pop song. I love it. It's super upbeat. I think it's much better than Lucky Star. So I'm definitely voting for Holiday.
Lucky Star is great as long as it never exceeds two and a half minutes. The song is so slight,
it's incredibly slight.
It's got one hook, which is "You must be my lucky star," and after that there are no hooks. That's not a hook, that's just weak.
Lucky Star the only song on this album that she wrote all by herself?
Possibly so, yes, but it's. I mean, I like it because it's nostalgic. It's got that amazing twinkly synth that comes in at the beginning. Because there are so many dance mixes around that exceed the two and a half minute mark, anything that exceeds 2.5 minutes, it's like it's suddenly overstayed its welcomes, and you start to realise every second beyond 2.5 minutes that goes by, you realise how much weaker it is than you remember.
I'm going to vote for Holiday. I fancy a Holiday. I'm on holiday at the moment, listeners. I'm actually broadcasting from Argentina, just in case you've worried. Thought there was a bit more tropicality in the sound of my voice. A bit more Latin rhythm there. Yeah.
I'm also voting for Holiday, so 3-0. Holiday goes through. The second qualifier is Borderline against Like a Virgin.
Oof. Oh, flipping Nora. Let's talk about Borderline then, because Borderline's going out, let's be honest.
It's got to be.
Can we assume that Borderline's leaving us here?
It's forgotten its passport. It's not getting over the borderline. It's out.
In fact, there's no way Borderline's
staying. It's been deported.
Let's talk about that then.
Let's hear Borderline.
again, like Lucky Star, Borderline is slight as fuck as a composition, but there are so many synth hooks. Oh, I don't even great. Know what to do with myself. It's like
it's
that
so
little
upbeat.
The little bubbly synth at the beginning, is unbelievable. And then there's another stabby synth on the chorus that sounds like Mario Kart, to the point where I actually looked up which year Mario Kart was around that time to see whether Mario Kart had inspired them or like, they'd inspired Mario Kart.
Completely.
It's so good. I love and it's yeah, it's just like every time you think the synth has given you its you know everything it can possibly give you,
it's
a new synth comes
moment,
in, and it's amazing. The song is barely there. I mean, it's sort of 5% more of a song than Lucky Star was.
Yeah.
But it still sounds great because it's sort of prime 80s early Madonna. What's not to like?
It's so chirpy and upbeat. Like you listen to 30 seconds of it and you're kind of skipping down the street in like in a mid 80s rom com. It's ridiculous. But I think it's a better song than Lucky Star. I think the drop into the chorus with the chords change is brilliant. Then that's
I said that I quantified up. It's 10% better than
It's gone up
maybe
11%. Okay, it's going up all the time. Dave, how much percent better is Borderline than Lucky Star, which is not even in this round?
Oh, I'm going higher.
Ooh.
Than that.
Go on, tell us.
I'm going to go 25 to 30%.
Oh, solid.
Is that
I like
you're
it a lot.
Huge Mario Kart fan?
No, it's because I don't like Lucky Star very much, and I do love Borderline. I think Borderline is why the 80s was such a great musical decade, because you get pop hits like this.
But, yeah. I mean, it's great. I mean, but are you saying, Dave, you like it more than Like a Virgin?
No, I'm not saying that.
Okay.
I'm voting for Like a Virgin. How about you two?
As are both of us, of course. Obviously. So 3-0.
3-0. It goes
Boom.
Through... The third qualifier is Material Girl against Crazy for You.
Oh, well, this is very easy again. I mean, is there anyone out there that's going to be betting Crazy for You? Is anyone Crazy for You? No, of course they're not.
No.
It's going to be Material Girl. It's just a stunning melody. And again, that came out after Like a Virgin. So again, you've got that double whammy where she comes out, she takes it up a notch at Like a Virgin massively, and then Material Girl comes out, and it's even a bigger hit, I think, at the time than Like a Virgin, probably because it comes afterwards. So she's
I'm just laughing at my notes. I think I don't like reading my notes. I try to never read my notes, but I'm going to read my notes for you verbatim because these are some of my favourite notes in a while. So the first one referencing Jelly Bean, who was this dance producer that she was doing a lot of work with, who was like amazing for dance stuff. And we'll talk about him as we go on because he's a big character in all of this. But these are my notes. Crazy for You. Jelly Bean struggled because it was a ballad. Madonna struggled because it was a ballad. It's from a film called Vision Quest. It's fine.
It is. That's a pretty good. What have I got? I've got ballad, very 80s reverb snare, bit boring, classic bassy vocal from Madonna. Yeah. Yeah. Those are my notes verbatim.
Yeah.
And that's what I've got on
thing.
It.
She'd sailed in on sort of. Sorry, Dave, go on.
I've got. I love a big pop ballad. This is sultry, rising to an epic crescendo.
Nah. Told you, the most contrary human being on the planet. I told you.
It's fine. But I mean, yeah, this basically Jelly Bean was like her DJ boyfriend, and he was like big in clubland, and he was doing some making big strides with her, producing her records, and he just hadn't done a ballad before, and she hadn't done a ballad to this point. Everything she'd done up to this point was a frothy, synthy dance pop hit.
Yeah.
And so it's her trying to find her way with ballads for the first time.
Yeah.
And I think as a first stab at it. In the public eye by this point, fair dues, it's pretty good. It stays on my Madonna playlists, but is it, you know, top quality Madge? No, it's mid-range Madge at best.
But mid-range Madge in this era is most other 80s acts.
Let's just define our Madge terms here. This is mid-range Madge, but from Madge's imperial period, and therefore this is like when you two say it's a crap song on a Beatles album, so it's still Madge of Honor. There you go. So I can't talk.
Excellent. So let's vote on these two. So Material Girl up against Crazy for You.
Material Girl, obvs.
Material Girl all the way.
Yeah. 3-0.
Just feel once and you know it. crazy for you. Trying hard to control my heart. I walk over to where you are.
So one thing that Madonna did very well around the early period when she was first moved to New York and she was trying to break through is
with $35 in her pocket, I hasten to add. That was it.
She chose the right people around her at the right time, and arguably that's one of her talents that she's managed to do very well throughout her career, is choose the right people around her. So New York, she moves there. She's aged 20, 1978. She's just dropped out of dance college.
She's very brave, Dave. She drops out of dance college. She gets on a plane. First plane she's ever gets on in life. Gets in a taxi. First taxi she's ever
first
gets
taxi
in
she's
her
ever
life.
In, yeah, yeah.
It's pretty mad. And then she's in like this... New York then was a dangerous, exciting city that could have eaten her alive. Yeah. And she survives and she thrives.
Yeah.
And she... She has a good instinct for the people who are going to open doors for her. And she dates a series of boyfriends in those early years who each, in their own way, advance her career. So the first one worth mentioning is Stephen Bray, who is a songwriter who she knew from growing up in Michigan. They both moved separately to New York. They recorded a demo tape together, and he later wrote her hits Angel, True Blue, Causing a Commotion and Express Yourself. So,
which is interesting because she keeps a relationship with him, not just from the relationship she has with him as a lover, as she still sees it, you know, how good they work together, and she keeps that going throughout her career then.
Yeah.
Which is interesting because she does have a lot of relationships, they don't seem to end that acrimoniously. She keeps something, keeps a positive thing from that and still has a working relationship with him as well.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah. So Stephen Bray, she has this demo tape that comes out of that. I don't think anything on the demo tape actually makes it onto the first album, but it does start to get her noticed. One of the people who notices her is a New York DJ called Mark Kamins. Now, he's quite trendy in New York. He introduces her to the boss of Sire Records, which was part of Warner Records. Yes. And they signed her to a 3-album deal. And then Kamins produces her debut single, Everybody.
Which is amazing. So I mean, we just say that as if like, oh yeah, and he got introduced and she got signed. I mean, it's a massive thing to just get introduced to someone and then get yourself signed off probably some pretty decent demos. But, you know, let's say upfront and honest, she's not the greatest singer of all time. So what pushes her is her talent, her drive is the thing that really pushes Madonna. That's her great talent, is this insane drive to get stuff done, to connect, to network. And I'm not saying she's a good singer, she's a very good singer, but what I'm saying is she's managed to get herself signed from, you know, one introduction.
So she's been in a relationship with this Mark Kamins, who's got her introduced to Warner Records. She signed the 3-album deal. And then Kamins produces her debut single, Everybody. So Warners are producing her debut album. They've put someone on it, to their guy on it, to produce her debut album. But Madonna is struggling a bit with the production.
This is the first signs of her madness, isn't it? She doesn't put up with it.
She's
22, she's got no money in the bank, and she takes a risk. She's like, nah, this ain't working. I need to get someone else in to help with this. And she gets in. Who does she get in?
So she starts dating John Jellybean Benitez, who's a trending New York DJ, and he comes in.
My middle name is also Jellybean. It's quite common.
It is common, isn't it? Yeah. I think your parents, it was that or Peter, wasn't it? And they went, oh, no, Jellybean's a bit more
Steve
conservative.
Steve Jellybean Sumner. Yeah, all right, fair enough. Sounds good. Sorry, Dave.
Yeah. So he comes in and produces Holiday, which became her first international top 10 hit. And then he remixes Borderline, Lucky Star, and Like a Virgin.
Do you want to hear a quote? I've got a quote from John Jellybean Benitez. What did he say? He said, I just wanted, because she was really worried about this first album, obviously her big shot just going up in smoke, and he said, I just wanted to do the best job for her. As much as she could be a bitch, when you were in groove with her, it was very cool, very creative. So that's Jellybean's reflection upon that period. brutal language.
Well, I had an interview with some people as well who said basically that Madonna was in the studio was exactly the same. It's like basically this. The gist of the interview was fame changes people, right? Yeah. It's like when you meet people, you know, they're lovely when they start and they're quite gentle and quite humble and everything else. And then when they've sold a million records, they're a bit shitty and they know what they want. And basically the gist was Madonna's been exactly the same. Didn't change once. Not from day one. She's been just as forthright, quote unquote, wink wink, from day one to day 101. Do you know what I mean? To day 1001. It's like she just never changed. It's like, you know, before she'd sold a single record, she was like in the studio. Apparently, the backing singers said that she used to clap her hands when they were having a smoke break and go, "Come on, boys, time is money, and the money's mine."
Money's mine. Yeah. Money's like, mine. She's that all the time. All right.
It's like, calm down. Love it. She knew who she was. Got to respect that.
The next qualifier is Into the Groove against Live to Tell.
Can we get into the groove of this? This is a bit more difficult. I think Live to Tell is like, she's getting better at ballads, isn't she, by this stage?
Yeah.
She's getting kind of more close to classic ballad action. But it's against Into the Groove. And You Can Dance. I mean, it's just...
For inspiration.
Exactly. I mean, how can we not... I've got to vote for Into the Groove, Dave. It's so unbelievably 80s. It's like the ultimate 80s dance song, isn't it?
And she's doing that wonderful helium baby voice that she does on Like a Virgin as well. I love that early Madonna helium. It's so knowing. It's like I'm doing my little baby helium voice. It's higher than I really sing. Woo! It's like, I love it. Love when she does it. So good.
Super pop. Okay.
And so it's Into the Groove was written for Desperately Seeking Susan because she's trying to get the film star thing going. But apparently they had two songs. They had like a song called Desperately Seeking Susan, which is, you can tell it's going to be bad. They had a song called Desperately Seeking Susan by a pair of writers, which was awful. They said, not that. And then Madonna and a writer wrote another song called Desperately Seeking Susan, and that was fucking awful as well. So they had to shelve two songs called Desperately Seeking Susan. And apparently Into the Groove was just written because they didn't have anything. It's like, and I think it's the demo that plays out over the end of Desperately Seeking Susan. If you listen to it, it's like, it still doesn't sound quite finished because it was like, we just had to throw something together because nobody can write a good song called Desperately Seeking Susan.
It's dreadful lyrically.
It's such an awful specific and awful title. So yeah, there were two songs.
So many syllables in that. Can you imagine singing that?
Desperately Seeking Susan. Where has Susan gone? We don't know. Yeah, awful, awful. So they shelved a couple of those and got Into the Groove. So I'm going to have to talk about...
What could you rhyme with Susan?
Boozin'.
Oh yeah, boozin'. She's gotta stop choosing.
Susan's
all the
losing.
Boozin'. Yeah, maybe something like that.
Choosing.
It's got legs. We should.
I think we should write it and go back in time, reinsert it into that movie, so that Into the Groove never happens, because we would be doing the world such a service. Not true. Into the Groove is amazing. I'm not voting for it. Though. Good.
What?
Live to Tell is one of my all-time favourite Madge tracks.
Wow.
I think it's trippy as fuck. Some of that stuff in it, those deep sounds, you know, at the beginning. And the breakdown, I mean, that's so brave. The whole thing breaks down to just like ambient sort of noises.
Tell a thousand lies. I've learned my lesson well. Hope I live to tell.
Compare the vocal. I've actually written on my notes here, compare this vocal with Virgin, exclamation mark. You know, because that helium bouncy vocal on Like a Virgin compared to this, it's gone from baby helium vocal Madonna to like I Am a Woman of the World vocal. And the thing is, even though I don't think she's a strong singer, she does these incredibly interesting things with her voice, and she tries to do different things, and suddenly she's got this long song that's really brave with these really interesting trippy breakdown sections that's telling a story, and she's really tried to reach into a deeper, more mature voice to do this personal lyric, and it fucking rules. This is absolutely top five Madonna songs ever for me, and I know Into the Groove is far, far more iconic, but I have to vote for Live for Tell, not least because I had True Blue, one of the first albums I ever bought, so some of the stuff on there is very personal to me, but Live to Tell I think is off the chart.
So okay. Brett, you voted for Into the Groove.
Yeah, I voted for Into the Groove.
You voted for Live to Tell.
It's actually getting exciting, Dave. You're going to decide, are you going to get Into the Groove or are you going to Live to Tell another day?
I've not actually ever really liked Into the Groove. That's the only song on this album that I skipped through. When I used to listen to this album, I used to skip through Into the Groove. Just the melody's a bit...
Would you have preferred it if it was called Desperately Seeking Susan? Desperately Seeking Susan.
Whereas Live to Tell is a fantastic ballad. You could say this, same about this. This is why the 80s were
so
great.
You could live, you could be alive, be vibrant, get on the dance floor and move it, or you could sit in the corner and sulk to a ballad. What have you chosen? Fucking ballad. Unbelievable.
The next qualifier is Papa Don't Preach against Open Your Heart.
Oh, well, now we're getting deep into True Blue here, aren't we? And you can feel the maturity in her music. Each album she releases, I mean, obviously we're getting a trajectory of 7 years here, but she's becoming more and more and more famous. And by this point, she's like a megastar, a cast iron certified global megastar. Both of these are great songs, but obviously one is absolutely canon, a huge, massive, massive song, and it's Papa Don't Preach, so obviously I'm voting for that. So let's talk about Open Your Heart.
What?
Open Your Heart's like top five Madonna songs for me.
Fuck you, Dave. Dave's at the moment can't talk because he's eating.
Yeah, which is podcast 101.
What the actual fuckity fuck? Right, so Steve and I are going to have to
pretend.
No one wants to hear that. Hang on, I'm going to swallow it. No one wants. Jesus thank Christ. God. Mm. Sorry, pod listeners. Hopefully, you won't hear any mastication from David.
Yeah, I'll edit all that. Open Your Heart has that awesome intro with that.
Watch out! Oh, it's so good.
It's brilliant.
And the synth. It's so bouncy and it's great.
Yeah, I love Open Your Heart. I'm voting for that.
Oh my! For fuck's sake! You fucking pair of idiots. Steve, you cannot vote for Open Your Heart. Please.
I told you, Like a Prayer was one of the first albums I ever bought, and Open Your Heart was on there. It's like it's etched into my
True
mind.
True Blue was the first album. You said Like a Prayer, it's True Blue.
I meant True Blue. Yes, True Blue.
For fuck's sake.
True Blue was one of the first albums I ever bought. Although, to be fair, Papa Don't Preach
is on True Blue.
I know, but it's Open Your Heart has been just one of the top things ever. So let's talk about Papa Don't Preach, because unbelievably, despite Brett's incredulity, it's going out.
Pair of fucking idiots, you two. I mean, of all the things you two have... I mean, there have been some unbelievable clangers you two have dropped. But to vote out Papa Don't Preach in the qualifying round is ridiculous. That should be in the final. It probably should have won. Let's be honest, listeners. Should have won. No.
There is only one song here that should win. And if it doesn't win, I'm leaving McCartney a goal forever.
Papa Don't Preach should fucking win. Yeah, whatever. Like a Prayer, whatever. Fuck you.
Right, let's talk about Papa Don't Preach. Can you just mute him?
No, don't fucking mute me. I'm fucking raging. I mean, and I'm not even a big Madonna fan. Just you two are how people still listen to this podcast? I judge you if you listen to this, quite frankly, because you are listening to two colossal idiots and me, who's got some taste, talk about music.
There's a lot of bleeping out here.
Open Your Heart is just the purest pop you could possibly wish.
Well, it's going. Do you know what, Steve? It's going through. We don't have to talk about it.
No, it doesn't. No, I'm just trying to.
Can I just explore with Brett? Is this? Are we talking like?
Don't explore.
Eleanor
it's raw
Rigby
now, Dave.
Level.
Don't talk about Eleanor
Rigby. Level rage here.
Yeah, but not because of how I feel about it, but how incredibly huge this song is in the canon of Madonna's work. I mean, it's just a massive song.
We're not denying that. We just prefer Open Your Heart.
I know. I mean, come on.
Papa Don't Preach is a bigger song in the Madonna canon. We are not denying that.
Fair enough. Yeah, that's just their opinion.
People who like the bouncy pop beauty of Open Your Heart, it's like the perfect breezy pop song.
No, it's good, but it's not even as good as Lila Bonita. It's Papa Don't Preach is massive. It's so much the better song. The string intro at the start, the bass sound. It's the song matter, the subject matter of this song, of Papa Don't Preach, is so much more interesting than pretty much any other pop song of the 80s.
Mm.
And it's got an incredible, great pre-chorus. I mean, it's got that please vocal she does at the end of that pre-chorus leading into the chorus. It's perfect pop songwriting on a really complex, difficult subject matter.
It is.
There's no way it should lose to Open Your Heart. But it has.
Well, I have to say that a couple of things about Papa Don't Preach, because it is going out, Brett. You're just going to have to accept this. I have a very, very, very clear memory of sitting in the sunshine in a campsite in France with a Walkman, proper old school 80s Walkman.
Solid.
And putting on True Blue and the first track being Papa Don't Preach. And this string quartet comes on. And I remember panicking because I've spent all my my pocket money on this cassette to take to France with me on this holiday. And I remember panicking, ejecting it, looking at it and going, oh my God, not only have they given me classical music, but they've still, it's not just that they've put the wrong cassette in the box. They've actually written Madonna on the fucking cassette. This is a travesty. That's a string quartet. This is a disaster. And then, of course, the song kicked in. I was totally right. And my tiny mind was blown that there'd been this classical intro.
It's so good.
It's so great. Also, I think this is This is going to upset you even more that I'm saying this and still not voting for it. I think this is her best vocal. I was listening to it
yeah,
earlier.
Yeah, it's great.
Her vocal on this is absolutely fantastic. She finds this rough place in her voice where she's not screeching, but it's just gets the pain of the story across. It's so good.
I'm hoping Dave is playing the pre-chorus now underneath what we're saying here, because that, when she comes with that please, it's such an amazing vocal. And it just underlies how stupid you are to not vote this.
Again, you don't hear the story, and then you sort of re-listen to it, and it's like, whoa, this is teenage pregnancy. This is hard-hitting. But also, what's interesting linguistically is it's so much of it is based around the ambiguity of the word baby, because obviously baby is a quite soft word that can mean sort of sweetheart, and also ambiguously in this of song course. Could mean I'm keeping my sweetheart because he says the he's going to marry me. You know, if those words weren't interchangeable and the song was called, you know, I don't even want to go there. I don't know what I want to replace it with.
My it's child. Like,
yes, I'm keeping the child inside my womb. You know, I'm not having an abortion. It's like there's like a million ways it could have gone.
Not only have they voted it out. I mean, unbelievable.
No, but it's true. You know, it's like there's so many other linguistic things that would not have even begun to work. But I'm keeping my baby is so wonderfully ambiguous that you can just hear it as a pop song, and it's only if you listen to it you go, hang on a minute, you know, it's brilliant, absolutely brilliant. But we're voting it out.
Cruel
mistress that is McCartney and Gold.
Devastated listeners. Open your heart goes through 2-1. And we're on to the next qualifier, which is La Isla Bonita. How's my pronunciation?
Why are you both pronouncing it like that? She pronounces it La Isla Bonita, so let's pronounce it the way she pronounces it.
La Isla Bonita.
Have you heard the song, David? Why are you struggling? You've heard her sing it. Just say it the way she sings it. La Isla Bonita. Have you listened to the song?
La Isla Bonita.
Fuck it.
Is that... No?
He hasn't listened to it. He's never... He's clearly never heard
No, I've never heard Madonna. Ever.
Fuck me.
La Isla Bonita. Am I getting better?
I don't care.
Against Like a Prayer.
Oh, wow. Superb. Both of these are superb. I mean, La Isla Bonita, you can smell the suntan lotion from here, can't you? It's her second holiday song, basically. Yeah. I mean, she's done a lot for the travel industry with Holiday and La Isla Bonita. I mean, you want to go on holiday after listening to this song. I mean, it's Club 18 to 30 all over it, isn't it? I mean, there's
probably... So, can I talk about where it came from, why it sounds
she
like
She did a... So, La Isla Bonita... I'm going to have another crack at it.
La Isla Bonita.
Because she did Spanish Eyes really soon afterwards, didn't she? Which also had that
this
Spanish...
This is her first Spanish... This is her first Spanish foray. And she did the Eleanor Rigby thing where she was on the phone to, like, you know, a friend of a friend who's, like, got a Spanish cleaner. And she's like, and it's like, can you just help me with the lyrics? No, I'm not going to pay you any money for it. No, I'm just going to say some Spanish things in the background that you're going to tell me on the phone now. No, you keep being a cleaner. That's fine. Classic Eleanor Rigby all over again, you know. Yeah, I'll just get a French teacher. She can teach me some stuff and I'll just won't credit her. It's great.
Michelle.
Yes, it's her first.
Do you mean Michelle?
What did I say? Eleanor Rigby?
Yeah, Eleanor
what the
Rigby,
fuck
yeah.
am I talking about? Can you just edit me saying Michelle?
No, keep that in, because earlier on you banged on about True Blue being your first album you ever bought, and then you said, Like a Prayer, the first album I bought. For fuck's sake, Steve, I mean, at least keep hold of your own legend here.
Quincy Jones asked Patrick Leonard, songwriter of big fame, to write something for Michael Jackson that sounded like Sade, quote-unquote, something Sade-like. So he wrote this... as a backing track and handed it to Michael Jackson, and Michael Jackson went, what's that? That's that the least me thing ever. Sod off, don't want it, no use to me at all. So he took it to Madge, her Royal Madgeness, and she loved everything about it and stuck the lyrics straight on it. So it could have been an MJ song.
Thank you.
note at the beginning of Like a Prayer, there's like some heavy guitar for like 2 seconds, and then a door slams shut and it goes into the really cool.
And who is playing that guitar?
It's Prince. And but he actually played all over the original track, and all of his guitar work is completely erased. So actually, instead of it being like a really cool thing that Prince has got like this tiny fragment on the beginning, it's kind of a bit disrespectful, because it's like, hey, there's a tiny fragment of the stuff you could have done, and then we slam the door and we get this quiet, and it's like, oh, okay, we've kind of shut Prince out of this song. Never mind.
Have you ever heard what he did? Have you ever heard a mix that has more Prince in it?
I may have. I did a lot of listening to a lot of demos for this. One of the difficulties researching this particular podcast was, again, there was so much extra stuff out there and just endless different versions of the songs.
Do you want to talk at this point about, because Like a Prayer, do you want to talk at this point about the different versions?
Should we talk about the Immaculate Collection generally, because that's where that's going to come in, really?
Yeah, and if you can, specifically focusing on the songs towards the end of the Immaculate Collection, and Like a Prayer is one of them. They used like a house mix on the Immaculate Collection, whereas the album version is just a totally different, you know, it's a pop record.
Well, when I came into researching this, I was coming at the whole thing from the wrong angle. I was quite irritated by the Immaculate Collection, because what I thought it was a standard greatest hits compilation, and then I discovered that it was a lot of funny remixes, and I just thought, oh God, what? You know, this is complicated now. And then I tried to go back and find other versions, and I realised that for every Madonna 7-inch, original 7-inch, there's a dance mix and a 12-inch dance mix, and then a remix, and then some sort of dance album that she put out with another version on it. And it's just like, what the hell's going on here? And what I had failed to understand, this was my failure, not Madonna's, was that Madonna really came from house music. And she came from, you know, the clubs, and she came from Detroit House, and she came from immediately post-disco, and that's who she was. And that when it came to releasing her 1990 statement of, I fucking straddled the 80s, here is my, and this is why this is more of an album than a greatest hits collection in some ways, you know, I straddled this whole decade, look at me, this is what I've put together. She said, look, we're going to remix everything, and we're going to put a dance spin on a lot of these tunes, and put some new tunes on that are very, very dancey, which we'll come to when we talk about them. And in some cases, it's to the detriment of the songs. In some cases, like Express Yourself, we'll talk about later, I think the dance versions are much stronger. You have to pick and choose with Madonna what versions you pick. But they did all sorts of mad stuff with the Immaculate Collection. And they also did like a 3D mix, where if you put it in headphones, you can tell what instrument is where in the room, which, of course, no one has ever done in the entire history of this album being out. So that was a total waste of everybody's money. But funny that they bothered. So this was a statement. This was, look, this is my big statement of how I conquered the 80s. And in another way in which it's not a straightforward greatest hits collection is the fact that she missed off 12 of her greatest hits.
We're obviously all voting for La Isla Bonita, and it's going to go
holy fuck.
It was a joke. Like a Prayer is my vote.
Obviously Like a Prayer. Obviously Like a Prayer.
Hughes?
Like a Prayer.
Like a Prayer goes through. Okay, what's the last? Is this how many qualities we've got left?
Two.
Let's do it.
Express Yourself against Cherish.
Okay. Get on with it. Oh, I'm expressing myself. Yes, it's easy. Express Yourself.
Express Yourself, yeah.
Cherish is a bit wet, isn't it? It reminds me of quite early 90s pop. It's surprising for someone as groundbreaking and vanguard destroying as Madonna, or certainly zeitgeist surfing as she is, to then, it just seems a bit of a backstep, Cherish, I mean, what she's come out of.
They're both from Like a Prayer, which is my favourite Madonna album, but Express Yourself, this is another dance mix on this album, which is different to the single.
And I think it's much better. I think this is an example of where, see, something like Holiday, please don't give me the dance mix, just give me the nice original thing. Here, the version of Express Yourself on the original album's got a lot of really bad synth brass on it, whereas the dance mix is proper, like, here's the 90s, we're all taking ecstasy, let's get on the dance floor, you know. It's like, the dance mix, for me, is far better So I think the Immaculate Collection version is much better.
I'm voting for Cherish, so Express Yourself goes through 2-1. And the last qualifier is, it's actually three in this one. It's Vogue, Justify My Love, and Rescue Me.
It's a three-hander. Oh. We've never had one of these before. How is this working?
What's going on?
So 17 songs on the album. There's only room for 16 in the qualifiers.
Yep, you do the math. What does that mean? You can't just chuck three in. Let's have Man United, Liverpool and Chelsea.
Yeah. So that means you've got
five each of Chelsea.
You've got to choose one of the three.
To go off?
No, to go through.
One of the three to go through. Well, Rescue Me, can we just get rid of it now? Because it's terrible.
Let's just get rid of it. What a waste of everyone's time. How many times, pop quiz, has Madonna performed Rescue Me since it came out?
None.
Oh.
Not one.
Wow.
Not one ever. Right? She nicks the choir bits from Like a Prayer and fails. Yeah. She nicks spoken word stuff from Justify My Love and Vogue and fails.
Yeah.
It's one of the weakest things here. No, it's easily the weakest thing here.
Yeah.
Let's just get rid of it now.
That's exactly why I said. On my notes, I put 5.5 minutes of offcuts and ideas not good enough to get in the other two.
Yeah.
That's exactly what it is. It's like a seaside.
Yeah. Bad.
When I need to dominate, you're not my little boy. You see that I am hungry for a life of understanding, and you forgive my angry little heart when she's demanding. You bring me to my knees while I'm scratching out the eyes of a world I want to conquer and deliver and despise. And right while I am kneeling there, I suddenly begin to care and understand that there could be a person that loves me.
So it's Vogue versus Justify My Love. Oof! Now these are two big iconic singles of the early 90s, obviously, because they were written for. Justify My Love was written for this album.
Yeah,
I believe.
Absolutely right. Justify My Love and Rescue Me were the two that were added to this. Were added to this album.
That's
collection,
right.
Specially.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, one of which is a classic and one of which is crap, and that's fair enough, you know, which is not a bad hit rate for the old classic manoeuvre of I'm putting out a greatest hits, I'm going to add extra tracks in the hopes that you buy it.
Mm. And 30 million people did.
Yeah, 30 million people did. But again, that's why, you know, actually doing a different mix of the songs actually made it a more worthwhile product, as well as just sticking extra songs on it, because she wasn't just shortchanging her fans with them buying songs they'd already had. It was new versions of them, so... Mm. Anyway, yeah, Rescue Me is toss. Vogue is great. Justify My Love is great. I love both of them. They're both so... I mean, how 90s do they sound?
Oh, my God.
Right, they're if you so listen definitive. To a song... Yeah, totally, right? If you listen to a song from, like, the early 80s, like 80, 81, 82, it sounds like the late 70s, right? That's because that's how decades work. If you listen, you know... But we're talking songs that came out, as far as I know, in like 1990, bang on, and it sounds like the mid-90s already. I mean, she's way ahead of the curve here. Mm. Both of these songs are epic. Do you want
to
pick them?
There's
do we want
to vote about
before we talk about one?
Let's get a hint here. What's old contrary Hugh's going to... I mean, Dave, what are you voting here?
I'm going to vote for Vogue.
Give us a tickle. Oh, I can see you doing Vogue in the mirror at home when you were 14, when this came out. And then putting on more Cure albums. Okay, I'm going to vote for Justify My Love.
Yep.
So, Steve, tell us a bit more about one of these songs, if you get my drift.
I'm going to tell you about Justify My Love, which tells you which way I'm voting.
I know. I mean, obviously,
so,
could have been a bit more subtle.
So, Laughing Leonard Kravitz...
Laughing Lenny Kravitz, yeah.
Laughing Leonard, the Leinster, is having a steamy affair with a poet called Ingrid Chavez, right? And she writes this super steamy poem, about their relationship, and it's like, right, you know, it's a bit freeform. It's like, oh, I want to touch your nipples in Hawaii, and I want to rub your
elbow. What does she rhyme with? Kravitz.
Kravitz with nips. I want to Kravitz, yeah, nips, and I want to, you know, Vaseline your nips in Honolulu, and all of this sort of stuff.
She's a good poet, then. Stuff.
She was fantastic.
I'm sure, and, it's very good. But
so Laughing Len, who then sort of breaks up with her and starts having a relationship with Madonna, and sort of like gives the lyrics to Madge, and Madge suddenly sticks it on a tune, and then they've got this dance beat that they nick from some other B-side they're doing.
So it's the lyrics from his ex-girlfriend, who he's
He's not nicked them, because she eventually gets some, but she gets 12% of the royalties essentially writing most, if not all, of the lyrics here. Mm. So it's not amazing. He took a contract to her and said, took a contract to her and said, sign this, Madge is covering it, there you go, thanks very much. And she wasn't best pleased with the whole outcome. So it's a bit of a sour taste in the mouth, you know, and it's a funny one because it's, you know, it's a bit spoken wordy, and it's very minimal, and it's just got him doing backing vocals and all this sort of stuff. But, oh, does it work? It really works. I love it.
But the video is really important. I mean, the video was, she's at this period, she's really working. I mean, obviously, if you don't know how to work MTV in the 80s, you're not going to be a pop star. Okay. And she did. She really knew how to work with video and visual arts. And as you said, it's co-wrote with Lenny Kravitz. But in the video, there's lots of different types of coupling, different types. So there's for the time, 1990s were saying, but obviously probably shot in 1989. There's lesbian couples, gay couples, there's shots of, I think, bondage as well. So it's a real like whoa moment for 1990 America, and MTV banned the video, which is like a ka-ching moment for Madonna, because she, as great business person, she then releases this as one of the first ever video singles, and it sells for about $10, 400,000 copies. So kaboom, it's amazing. It just works so well for her in that sense. So I'm voting for Justify My Love. Dave's voting for Vogue. What are you giving us, Steve? What shapes are you pulling?
Oh, Vogue.
There we go.
There we go. Some shapes for you there. That's good radio, if ever there was.
Excellent for the audiovisual medium.
I'm voting Vogue.
Vogue. Okay. And that, listeners, is the end of this epic qualifying round. You seem to get the quarterfinals. I like it in the quarterfinals. Discussing things in the quarterfinals. Ooh, what will happen? What will happen in the quarterfinals?
So the first quarterfinal is Holiday against Like a Virgin.
Oh, well, I mean,
there's lots to say about both.
There is, but what is obvious to say is Like a Virgin is a massive mega hit. And I know Holiday does start everything for Madonna, but come on, it's up against Like a Virgin. It's right, gotta be.
Well, I'm with you. So should we talk about Holiday?
Yes. It would be so.
Right, so there's some lovely post-disco, not post-disco, like full-on disco band whose name suddenly escapes me. It's like a disco three-piece who write this tune, Holiday.
And the Curtis Hudson wrote it. Yeah, Curtis Hudson.
That's it. And then basically everyone around them is like, that's a massive hit. That's a hit. You got to put that out. It's a hit. And their record company like totally reject it. So they pitch it to like two other artists who totally reject it as well.
Yeah.
And then they pitch it to Jelly Bean and he pitches it to Madonna and she does it and it breaks her out. She's had two singles already. Yeah. And they haven't done much. They've done like business on the dance chart, but they haven't done much. And then Holiday comes out and just breaks her open. And if you just watch the videos of her performing it, like I said earlier, it's just so fresh. It's just her bouncing around, doing this weird singing and the diction. Someone pointed out in an interview, and I had never really thought about it, her diction is so clear in Holiday. It's like really clear and precise. Like she's almost diction. I think he said she's like speak singing it almost. I was like, oh yeah. But I love that there's a video and he's talking about it, because I always thought it was like the most vacuous pop song ever, and he's going, oh man, no, it was really like dark in the 80s and I was watching the news cycle and everything was really stressful. I just thought, wouldn't it be great if we could have like a day we all like took a day out from like all the pain and like we took a day out of life, like not just a day out of like, you know,
like a vacation,
like a vacation, if we took a vacation from the whole of life. And he went to this whole thing about it. I'm like, wow, how did Madonna make it sound so vacuous, but in a good way, like the ultimate party song.
It's great. It's what you want.
Yeah.
I mean, holidays are amazing. They are literally what you think of as the happy time of year, don't you? You're going on your holiday and you plan your year around that and everything. They're massive. So it's weird there aren't more songs about this subject matter. There is a gap. Yeah, it's a great pop tune and it does launch her and it's amazing. And this is one of the songs that she just argued with the producer Reggie Lucas on, and he walks out halfway through because he just couldn't deal with it anymore.
Yeah.
But
yeah, she doesn't like working with him on that first album at all, and dumps him pretty quickly, doesn't she?
No.
And it's synth-tastic. I mean, I don't like the song that much, and it's never been one of my favourite Madonna tracks. It probably wouldn't make a Madonna compilation for me. It's great. It's a great frothy pop tune, and it totally deserves its place in her story. It's super important in the Madonna story, but Like a Virgin easily beats it for me here.
Oh, completely. I mean, yeah, it's totally. Like a Virgin is my vote too, Dave. What would you vote for?
Like a Virgin, definitely.
Oh, there you go. Perfect.
Second quarterfinal is Material Girl against Live to Tell.
Oh, nice and easy. I mean, it was a 50-50 shot of this was going to be my first single or not that I ever bought. Oh, well, my sister bought for me because I didn't have the pocket money at the time. I will vote for Material Girl because I should have bought that as the first single, but I didn't.
Oh, this is
it's
hard.
It's a brilliant tune. It's such an amazing... Think about that video. I mean, it's just... This is what cements her as a huge megastar. I know Like a Virgin is huge, but even when she appears on Top of the Pops with Like a Virgin, it feels to the UK market like she's come out of nowhere. Obviously, she hasn't, but that is a huge...
Are you talking about Material Girl now?
I am. I'm talking about Material Girl, but I know Like a Virgin is a single that's released before Material Girl.
Yeah.
And then she drops, so it's like... Some people could have said, oh, well, Like a Virgin is a hit because it's this kind of shocking lyric and all of those type of things. And she's dressing so provocative, you know, all of that. But then when she comes out of Material Girl, it's just an honest to goodness, incredible pop song. It's the melody is so memorable and hummable. It's so clever.
But you're so right about the video as well, because it's like the beginning of her I am going to be a chameleon and do different looks, because she goes through those different stages and she makes it so visually interesting when she do it. And the fact that she actually did it, and I didn't realize until I saw the clip, I think it was today, of Marilyn Monroe doing the scene in Gentlemen Prefer Blondes. I didn't realize it was a complete, not just, I mean, it's a homage, not a ripoff, but it's like literally her saying, you know, I am the successor to Marilyn Monroe, here is me doing that scene from Gentlemen Prefer Blondes. And it's like, that's a hell of a statement, because if that had backfired, it's like, I'm the new Marilyn Monroe, I'm going to completely underline it in this video. If that had backfired on her, that would have been a disaster.
It's a great one to take that risk with, because it's such strong material.
It's a great song. Great song. And the backing vocals as well. I mean, whoever the hell said to the male backing vocals, I want you to sing all on the same note for the entire thing. Living in a material world. It's like someone somewhere in the studio must have gone, no, that's the worst idea you've ever had. Nobody's the backing vocal all on the same note. It's fucking brilliant. It's so good.
So good.
It is. Every part of it is a hook, and there's so many different parts of it, and it's so catchy. Yeah. It's almost like, and well, it's very much like an ABBA song.
Yeah,
it's got so many musical hooks in it. Said, I'm going to vote for Live to Tell because it's even better.
No, it's not. It's just the one that got rid of Into the Groove. It fucking is, isn't it?
It's
fucking Living to Tell, isn't it? Fuck me.
Have I got the casting vote?
Cannot get rid of Material Girl as well as Into the Groove.
Oh,
for
I might
fuck's
have to.
Sake. No, it fucking doesn't have to.
Okay. All right. Look, to be clear, I think Live to Tell is one of the greatest things in the Madonna catalogue. I'm hugely, hugely
vote
into it. But you're right. You're right in that I think Material Girl has to probably go through here. So can I, in respect of how great it is, because it's so good, can I just tell a quick story about Live to Tell then before it goes out?
Brilliant.
So basically, the Patrick Leonard, I think it is again, basically he's been given like a song in a movie, the name of which escapes me. And Madonna's on the way over to co-write this song with him for this movie. And then I think he gets a phone call as she's on the way over in the car saying effectively he's been fired from the movie. So Madonna turns up. She's like, yeah, let's write a song. Let's get out the coffee. Let's get a pen. Let's write a song. And he's like, oh, shit, I've got to tell Madonna I've been fired from this. Is off. And he's like, I'm really sorry, I've been fired from the movie. And she's like, oh, well, my husband, Sean Penn, is in a movie and that needs a song. Let's write a song for that instead. So it's like, oh, okay.
This is how great a networker she is. She's just like, no, don't worry.
Don't worry, we'll just write a song. So they sit down and wrote the song, you know, for that movie instead. And it's Live to Tell, which is just phenomenal. You know, I think he had the tune worked up already. So actually, I think it was the tune he was planning for this other film. As I say, the name of which escapes me. I'm not even sure whether that other film even came out, but he was... Yeah, they just moved it across. So she's brilliantly adaptable to situations and working with people. And like you say, even though she was so strong-headed, she manages to network so incredibly. But Live to Tell, so good. It's so good. But you're right. I think for it to knock out two of the absolutely towering sort of Madonna classics might be pushing it a little. So Material Girl stays in.
Well done. Good decision. Well, good decision for my blood pressure, if nothing else.
Okay, Material Girl goes through 2-1. And the next quarterfinal is Open Your Heart against Like a Prayer.
Oh.
Well, what
Open
can we
Your
say?
Heart. Is Madonna an interpretive artist?
Bit of both.
What do you mean? Define that. What does that question mean? I don't understand.
Well, that song was meant for Cyndi Lauper.
Right. Yes, I did. I do remember hearing that.
It was written by someone else. And she took, two guys. One of them was called Peter Raffleson. And Madonna took the existing melody and retains all the familiar synth sounds.
Yeah,
in Open Your Heart, and the chorus is still intact exactly. And
you can hear it might be worth putting a bit of his original demo in here actually, because that's fascinating to listen to. So you can find it on YouTube.
Leonard, who's Madonna's longtime producer during this period, he added the bass line because the demo didn't have a bass line, and he polished up all the instruments. And then Madonna made minor changes to some of the lyrics in the verses, and she was going to take the whole of the songwriting credit.
Yeah.
And Peter Raffleson had to negotiate just to keep some of the songwriting credit to a song that he clearly wrote.
Yeah, she's very naughty. No, she's not an interpretive artist. She pretends to be more of a songwriter than she is sometimes. I think it's complicated. I think she matures as a songwriter. I think she's come up with a lot of really excellent ideas, and she gets better and better and better as she goes along. But she's also, with all the good and bad implications of that word, completely ruthless. And that means that if you bring her a song and she co-writes it with you, and that means she co-writes the word and of, you better watch your back, because she's probably going to take 97% of the songwriting credits for the and the of that she just read, you know, added to your lyric. So, you know, no, she's not an interpretive artist. She's someone that sort of works with songwriters and increasingly brings more to the table as she gets older, I think.
Completely. Yeah. I mean, she puts the Madonna, the Madge stamp all over it. I mean,
but it's not like a Linda Ronstadt situation where it's just, you know, you're given the song and you sing it. She's trying to be something else. Can I just say that it's that a cappella you can find on the internet of YouTube it's an isolated vocal for Open Your Heart is fascinating, because again, I think she uses her voice, and her voice is limited, and I don't say that disrespectfully. She uses her limited voice in so many interesting ways, and it's such an interesting instrument, I think more so because it's limited. But the wobbly vocal thing she does on this is it's such an interesting choice. And again, if you listen to it from the perspective of what a vocal coach would say, they'd be like, what the hell are you doing? You're not singing from your diaphragm, you're singing from your throat, you're wobbling your throat. Your throat's all closed up, but it's such an interesting and distinct sound that she makes. It's like whatever the hell she's doing, it's so Madonna.
Oh baby, you look a little sad, boy, I wonder why. I'll follow you around, but you can't see. You're too wrapped up in yourself to notice. So you choose to look the other way. Well, I've got something to say. Don't try to run, I can keep up with you. Nothing can stop me from trying. You've got to open your heart to me.
Baby, open your heart against Like a Prayer.
Like a Prayer. I love everything about Open Your Heart, but Like a Prayer, obvs.
Dave, what are you doing?
I'm voting for Like a Prayer.
Of course you are.
And of course, and so am I.
Yeah.
3-0.
Yeah.
And the last quarterfinal is Express Yourself against Vogue.
Oh,
Express Yourself.
I say again, the dance mix on the Immaculate Collection is significantly better than the full of dodgy synth Yamaha brass stabs version that came out originally. It's great. It's like a follow-up to Material Girl in some ways. I like some of the lyrics. Satin sheets are very romantic. What happens when you're not in bed? You know, it's like, okay, that's a little bit of a development here. It's like, you know.
Oh, it's definitely more of a development. Yeah. I mean, she's definitely, yeah, because Material Girl probably was a song written for her on her second album, still not fully able to control what she does.
I love Express Yourself. I love it. But I think I'm probably going to have to vote Vogue.
Strike a pose.
It was originally intended as a B-side, and I think they did it in those days kind of on the cheap because of that. And then, but it was really good. She did the vocals really quickly. They came up with a rap really quickly, all of the celebrities.
Yeah.
It's just one of those kind of songs that just hits it perfectly on the zeitgeist. It's. I mean, if you're going to do like a, hey, let's do a video compilation or a montage of something that represent the early 90s, then you would use that track, wouldn't you?
Yeah, again, brilliant video. 90s. Yeah, brilliant. The video is so important to it, but you're right as well. Yeah, I think Shep Pettibone in the studio said, why don't you do a spoken word mid-late and just come up with names of some celebrities, and they just wrote them all down and made it work. And it's just, everything about it works.
I don't like it, I'll be honest. I don't like it. Ooh. A lot of people love it, so I'm going to vote for Express Yourself.
I do, Dave. Love Express Yourself.
Dave, what are you voting for? You voted for Vogue, have you?
No, I haven't.
Oh, go on then. Come on, what are you voting for?
Has Steve voted?
Dave, vote for Vogue. Express Yourself and vote.
I'm voting for Express Yourself.
Oh!
I haven't got a problem with that. It was pretty close for me anyway.
Semi-final!
Are we ready to tackle the semi-finals?
Yes, let's do it. Bring it on, baby.
First semi-final is Like a Virgin
against
Material Girl.
Oh, Bob. I mean, they're right. I mean, both off the same album, both produced. This album produced by Nile Rodgers. So she's gone from the first album, where she's argued with the producer, had to get her boyfriend in to help her finish it. And then she's got Nile Rodgers in. So you can tell that step up in production. You can just hear it immediately. Both amazing tracks. I don't know how I'm going to vote on these, but I know Like a Virgin, we haven't told the story of that. This was written by Billy Steinberg and Tom Kelly. So Billy Steinberg writes the lyrics. He's coming out of a bad relationship and he's getting into a new one and he's feeling great about it and uses the analogy of Like a Virgin. Which is quite a line. And she takes it. So she hears the song. And she takes it to Nile Rodgers and he's like a what? That's not a lyric. What are you doing? She had to really convince him And he's like, you know, to use it. He's like, maybe like a prayer's a better one. No, we're like a virgin stage, not there yet. So they, you know, she had to really convince him to take the song on and record it and go with it.
Can I do an interesting song when you hear the male demo with a male voice?
Yeah. Can I try just a longer run at the story?
Go for it.
I think that there's. I don't want to override it, but just because I love it so much. Hopefully we can add, it'll be an addition to rather than a thing, but I'll do what I can, or just chop me out. But yeah, so what is it? Tom Kelly, Billy Steinberg,
Tom Kelly. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So if you listen to it, so it's a ballad, like a proper slow ballad, and you can hear it exactly what you said about him sort of getting out of the relationship. It's like, I made it through the wilderness. Somehow I made it through, and I didn't know how lost I was until I found you. And it's like, whoa. And so he's doing this. I love this. He's like doing this lovely ballad and whatever. And then he gets to like a virgin. And they sort of look at each other, and it's clearly not working in a ballad style. So they just bin it. And then months later, they come back to it, and they're like pissing around, like a couple of beers, you know, and he starts doing it in the silly, silly, bouncy voice. And he does it in that falsetto, which you can hear on the internet, which is so brilliant. And they're looking at each other going, I mean, they're totally taking the piss. It's like a complete joke.
Yeah.
And they're looking at each other going, is it just me or does that work?
And they bring in the bass line, don't they? They do like a four tops bass line. This is a rip off. I Can't Help Myself by the Four Tops. Bass line is
total R&B sort of soul rip off bass line, but on the crazy synth. Yeah, exactly. And then because they're big songwriters, so I think it's because I think they did True Colors for Cyndi Lauper. They wrote Eternal Flame, for God's sake. I mean, they are big songwriters, but they do this as a sort of joke demo. I think no one would have you know countenanced this if they weren't already very successful songwriters, and I think they play it to people and people turn it down, and Madge hears it, and within like I think like the first verse she's like, well, that's the name of my next album. It's like she just fucking knew, and it was literally this dodgy joke song. And listening to that that demo, that wonderful demo that we have, that just like you said, of him doing it in his silly falsetto voice, just great. I love everything about the story.
It's like a single BG.
Yes, single BG, exactly.
The other BGs haven't turned up, so it's just him. It's just Morris on his own. But we can't, like a virgin.
But we can't even get any sense of how controversial this must have been. It's like that whole thing of, you know, you can't go back and hear X record for the first time, or see Citizen Kane for the first time, or hear Elvis for the first time, and have any sense of how dramatic that was. You know, because then she gets, I think people sort of said, you know, you don't want to touch that song, and she did anyway. And then the first ever MTV Video Music Awards.
Oh my God, this is unbelievable!
Comes on in a wedding dress,
literally
in a wedding dress on a wedding cake, does the song, and it's so controversial that even her manager turns to her and says, "Your career is over."
No, she doesn't just do the song like, "Oh, sing the song." She basically, for the end of the song, dry humps the stage for a good 30 seconds and rolls around. And it's like, this is MTV Live. Like, this is 1985.
Sorry. Yes, you know? That is the best, but you're quite right.
Yeah. I mean, it's extreme. This is an era, not of close as where Tipper Gore is trying to, you know, stop Judas Priest from doing anything because they might be getting people to kill themselves. I mean, this is just a seriously, in the 80s, early 80s America, there was a lot of crazy stuff going on, like about moral rectitude and things like that. It was proper dangerous to do what she's doing, or really out there, really outre. And to do that is just like, wow. Yeah, yeah. You're right. The manager's like, your career's over. You've just...
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean...
For your manager to say, that's it. You're done.
Figuratively and literally fucked it.
Yeah. Very nice. But yeah, it's like that's it. You've done. And of course, that was the moment. It's like, even more than Holiday had been, it's like, you know, you are now a superstar. No one, you know, everybody is talking about you. Everybody knows your name. But what a... What
she keeps riding, yeah. She keeps riding that extraordinary tight line between.
Literally. Yes, creatively, yeah. Literally.
She does. She keeps riding that line of just for 6 years of just almost being cancelled in a late 80s, early 90s style, but still being mega famous and selling by the bucket load.
But to pick a career ending song to make your career. I mean, that's, you know, everybody is saying to her, you can't sing this. Are you completely out of your mind? I mean, what a thing. And it's a great song. It's a great bass line. Again, I love the helium baby vocals. That's such a naughty, she's doing such a naughty Lolita thing. You know, it's like playing with that whole baby vocal thing. It's like such a deliberate sex kitten provocateur thing going on. Everything about it is fabulous. It's just fabulous and brilliantly so.
Is it as good a song as Material Girl? I think Material Girl is one of her most perfect pop songs. So I'm gonna buck the trend. I know we talked a lot about Like a Virgin, not much for Material Girl, but I'm gonna vote for Material Girl.
I'm gonna vote Like a Virgin.
I'm gonna vote Like a Virgin too.
Okay.
Wow.
Like a Virgin goes through to the final.
Just so briefly on Material Girl.
Okay. Go on.
Just briefly on Material Girl, it's interesting because one of the things people say it sort of was the quintessential, summed up the sort of consumerism of the 80s song. But if you watch the video is making a point, because in the video, the guy that wins Madonna's heart at the end of the video is the guy that stops buying her things and buys her like something, I think some roses, some flowers or something.
Like some buttercups or daisies. Yes, do you know what I mean? Hand-picked.
Yeah, hand-picked. And it's like,
and he picks her up in a pickup truck. Good old boy.
And all anybody, including me, remembers about that song is that it summed up the consumerism of the 80s. But the video was saying exactly the opposite thing, and that got totally lost. Brilliant.
And the second semi-final is Like a Prayer against Express Yourself.
Oh, well, I'm going to express myself and say it's obviously Like a Prayer.
Obviously Like a Prayer, discussion. I think. Yeah, moving that on.
Vote for me, vote for Steve. Dave, what are you voting for?
The same. 3-0, Like a Prayer goes through to the final.
Of course it does, yeah.
And then our final is Like a Virgin against Like a Prayer.
The song that Steve will leave this podcast if we don't vote for it to win, as I predicted right when he said it. Right, Steve?
Which one?
Like a Prayer.
Fucking obviously. it's just ridiculous. It's as good as anything could possibly be. I mean, it's at this point it's irrelevant whether it's a Madonna tune or not to me. It's absolutely unassailably up there.
Which version is your favorite?
Oh, Chuff Biscuits. I don't know. How many versions are there? Probably the seven.
For our American listeners what Chuff Biscuits are.
I'm going to say the...
And
the,
where you can buy them.
You can buy them in IKEA. I'm going to say that the 19-inch double dance backwards mix is my favourite. I've no idea. I couldn't tell you how many versions there are of Like a Prayer.
19-inch disc.
Fuck, can you buy Chuff Biscuits in Argentina?
No, they're all out, unfortunately. I mean, I would love to. I don't know what a Chuff Biscuit is. I've never even heard the expression.
No.
It's not even for our American listeners, for any of our human listeners. What the fuck is a Chuff
it's
Biscuit?
It's nearly minted. No, Let's move on. I mean, I am a very, very creative mind. And as you know,
it's quite scatologically centered, I have to say, Steve.
Yes, but the listeners don't know that because Dave edits them out. And so none of this has got on the podcast, so none of this is an issue. So everything's fine.
What the Chuff Biscuits does it matter?
What the Chuff Biscuits do we care? We don't. Can we talk about Like a Prayer now?
Can we please?
My favorite version is the is the album version.
I think that's the version I'm... what's the difference? You're going to have to talk me through. I've got this up.
I think the version on this album is the dance version that she took out on the tour that was right before this, which was the Blonde Ambition tour.
Yeah, Blonde Ambition.
And I think on the Blonde Ambition tour, she played on stage the dance version.
Oh, this is the one I'm more familiar with, interestingly. I'm going to have to go back to the album version then. I feel like I've let Like a Prayer down after declaring it the best song that's ever happened in the history of the entire world. I'm not aware of all the versions. I'm going to go and flagellate myself. Is that the right word? Chuff biscuits.
So Like a Prayer comes out. Now, Pepsi, who are having this massive battle with Coke throughout the 90s, to be the most predominant soft drink on the market, and they're amazing at
it's an important battle
marketing. Yeah, it's massive. It's huge.
Oh, they had Jackson as well, didn't they?
Yeah, they did.
Yeah, they did. They had loads of people.
Have you also seen the video? Sorry to digress, but it's the best thing I've seen on the internet in the last year. There's a Pepsi video where David Bowie is a mad scientist and he creates Tina Turner, and then they dance.
Wow,
it's absolutely phenomenal.
That is some weird science.
It's a Pepsi advert, and like David's like, oh, I'm a crazy scientist, look at me being crazy, what am I going to put in this machine? Oh, I put the wrong thing in, what's come out? Oh, it's Tina Turner. And then that's absolutely amazing. Look it up on YouTube if you can. Just genius.
Wow, that is extraordinary. That is some late night brainstorming there that come up with that idea.
Yeah. It's worth it for Bowie's amazing facial acting as well, because he doesn't have any lines, so he has to do it all with his face, and boy does he.
Oh, yeah. He'll go the extra mile.
Yeah. Sorry, Brett, back to the story.
So anyway, Pepsi and Coke are battling out. So Pepsi have to continually plough millions and millions into marketing, which they do really well for a long period of time. And they decide to pay Madonna $5 million to be able to premiere her new single, Like a Prayer, which they do. And great. And they do their own promo, the Pepsi promo, which is very successful. And then 3 days later, she releases her video for her song, Like a Prayer. And it is as controversial as anything that's ever been released, even by Madonna standards.
I'm gonna kiss Jesus.
Wow. It's just extraordinary.
Jesus is a black guy now.
And there's blood coming out of his eyes at certain stages. And then she's cavorting again on the floor.
I'm gonna do a sex with Jesus.
It is extraordinary.
Oh, it's spectacular
stuff.
Huge
furore. And Pepsi have to just pull their backing of Madonna and their version of this beer. But she still keeps the $5 million.
Yeah, of course she does, yeah.
When you call my name.
Right, so bonus point about the video shoot, which I love, is that it was supposed to be a 3-day video shoot, which was quite so it was quite an epic sort of situation. Yeah. But it turned into a 4-day video shoot. Does anybody know why?
Oh, was Warren Beatty involved?
No. So you know that where he's like a statue and then he comes alive and she kisses him and all that stuff.
Right, yeah, yeah.
Right, yeah. Well, obviously in the video, it's clearly him and he's been painted over to look a bit statuey, right? And then he comes alive and it's all good, right? You remember that bit?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, they made like a papier-mâché statue, which was supposed to be what they were filming. And then the papier-mâché statue would sort of like, then they'd, with the wizardry of editing, they'd sort of turn it to him. And basically they got to sort of the end of day three, to the end of the shoot, and everyone's wanted to go home, whatever. And someone brings out the papier-mâché statue and it's like the worst piece of shit ever. And everyone's just like, you can't. And I think they filmed it and everything. And it was just like, this statue is a total disaster. And they had to do an entire extra day of filming just to make up for the sheer terribleness of the bad papier-mâché statue, which did not look human in any way.
Papier-mâché is a very hard medium in which to work, I would say. There haven't been many great mâché artists. I mean, you get
to be
a few
mash-ups, but it's not impossible that I may have made up the papier-mâché bit. But anyway, the statue was, I don't know, I that's what I'm remembering it as. I can't absolutely swear to the physical medium
veracity
in which it was done. Yes, but anyway, the point is the statue was total crap and they had a whole fourth day of shooting on the basis of it. And I think people may have been fired.
Oh, yeah, well, it's big budgets and people and stars like Madonna are, you know, time is money and the money is mine. She would not have stood for that.
No, but let's just dwell on the fact that the video is phenomenal. The song is phenomenal.
The song is phenomenal. Yeah, the video
looks phenomenal. I think it's my favorite. It's my favorite Madonna look. I love it, and I think that is important in this context because her looks are so era-defining.
It's a very cool look. Yeah, she's got on this. It's this dark hair. If you're not seeing the video recently, she's got her hair's probably the darkest it's been throughout her career. It's black, I think.
I love it. She looks just so good. So good. And cool. But the song itself is, I think it's just perfect. I think it's perfect. It gives me chills. It gives me chills. It's phenomenal. You know, it should be cheesy to use a choir in that way, and it's genuinely uplifting. And it just, you know, the fact that it manages to swing between these incredibly quiet sections with no beat at all, and then into kind of upbeat dance gospel. And you know, so deftly, and it doesn't feel jarring at all, and it manages to switch between these minor key sections, and then the minor key sections are so, especially towards the end, are so effective, because then when the major key comes back in, they bring the choir back in when it changes back to the major key, and the juxtaposition between her singing in minor and then the whole choir coming in when it goes major again, it's just ridiculous. It's as good as it gets.
Everything in the rhythm of her vocal, which is amazing, and everything she does, her vocal rhythms are stunning. But yeah, just the way it builds and drops and then comes back again and dovetails with the original ideas. Yeah, it's phenomenal. But Dave, it's up against Like a Virgin, which is perhaps one of the most era-defining songs of the 80s. But it's not a song that she wrote. It's a song that was written for her, and literally, I mean, Billy Steinberg says she basically took even the ad-libs of the vocal that Tom Kelly put down. She copied for her version of Like a Virgin, and that she didn't actually meet the songwriters at all until 5 years later, when Billy Steinberg meets her at a party and she's with Warren Beatty. I mean, this is just classic Madonna, just with another famous person. She's again in a relationship with Warren Beatty. And he goes, "Oh, Madonna, it's so great to meet you. I've always wanted to meet you." He introduces himself. "I am Billy Steinberg. I wrote Like a Virgin." And Warren Beatty's like, kind of laughs, like, "How can you not have met the person who's written your biggest hit? That's obviously a joke." But it was true. She hadn't met him. And she goes, "Oh," he says, "I've always wanted to meet you." And she goes, "Well, now you have," and just walks off. Like, original mic drop.
Wow.
Brutal.
Wow.
Brutal. Yeah.
That's quite spectacular.
It's quite something, isn't it? So, yeah. Dave, what are you voting for, given that story now? Does that change your opinion on Like a Virgin?
What, so you're voting for Like a Virgin?
No, I'm just asking you, what are you voting for? Come on.
Well, so Madonna said Like a Prayer was very important to me because I
it's felt... Like a versus Like a.
Yeah.
We realize Like yeah. a what? Virgin or Prayer? We've got the two very similar titled songs in the final. Perfect. It's like a final.
But I think that is an important thing, though. I think that's deliberate. I think it's another thing that's brilliant about Like a Prayer is yeah. in the same way that Born in the USA was a callback in a way to Born to Run. You know, like a prayer. I mean, you know, just looking at the titles, Like a Virgin to Like a Prayer, it's like I've gone from, you know, sexual provocateur to this, you know, deep, you know, religious imagery, and this is part of my maturing and growing up. Yes, I'm still being wildly controversial, but I'm doing it in a more grown up way, and I'm confronting this religious issue that I have with my upbringing and the guilt that I feel. I'm dealing with that head on. So I think another thing that's great about Like a Prayer is that it's a call back to Like a Virgin in its title, except she is responsible for writing a lot of it this time.
Yeah. Dave, what are you voting for?
Well, Madonna said that Like a Prayer means a lot more to me than Like a Virgin. She said, when I was recording the song, I could feel the impact that it was going to make. And I think it is the better song. So I'm voting for Like a Prayer.
Because otherwise Steve is going to leave the podcast.
Well, no, I think it was still going to win because of you and me. I just never would have spoken to Dave again, which would have made it sort of structurally difficult to do the podcast. But that's... I wasn't going to actually walk
can
out.
Can you tell Dave think this? And I'd have to tell Dave, and then Dave would
no,
have
I was
to
going to do it on the chat. I was going to do it on the chat function on Zoom, the little chat box or whatever. But it's fine. Yeah. Anyway, it seems that you're still stuck with me because I'm not leaving.
Oft promised, never delivered.
You've been waiting, but it has yet to happen. Yeah, so I mean,
can I just attend you're voting for Like a Prayer?
Yes, I'm voting for Like a Prayer.
Oh,
yes,
good.
Yes,
that's as correct. Am I. It is incredible.
As is Dave. Yeah, it is incredible.
Oh, it's incredible. Can I read you my notes for it?
Please.
Super memorable intro, best vocal on the album, a brooding in disco intro, then goes to pure Madonna pop, the essence of what she does best, intimate, upbeat, danceable, universal. Oh, and Prince plays guitar in the intro, but not this version.
No. No, beautifully put. Absolutely right. I think that sums it up wonderfully. It's good as it gets.
Yeah, it's fantastic. It is amazing.
Thank you, Madge.
Boom.
Susan
recently.
I think she went on one of those all-inclusive boat holidays.
Okay, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. She loves those.
Desperately seeking Susan, where has Susan gone? Maybe she's gone cruising, or maybe she was here all along. Desperately seeking Susan, where can Susan be? Maybe she's out boozing, or maybe she's down in Lanzarote. Where can Susan be? She's clearly not here with me. I wish she hadn't gone away. Hard to carry on when Susan might be gone. I wish Susan was here today. Oh, Susan.